We've just caught up with the maestro, Christoph Eschenbach. Welcome back to Philadelphia.
Hello, I'm very happy to be back.
Could we talk a little bit about the music in this program? This program has such wonderful melodies. How do all the pieces complement one each other or fit together?
Well, I mean, Strauss and Strauss, they fit together also because these are young pieces. Till Eulenspiegel was written, I think, when he was 22. Amazing score and amazing craftsmanship at this young age. And the horn concerto when he was 18. And that's quite a miracle, I must say.
And the soloist, Jennifer Montone, is someone you hired when you were in Philadelphia. What's it like performing it with her?
Oh, it's wonderful. It's just a dream because she, from beginning on, when she played her audition here, I was totally kept by her masterful playing and by her musicality. And this combined, of course, has carried its fruits and now in the concerto. So I'm very happy.
And we're about to hear the Schumann Symphony No. 2. Can you talk a little bit about why you're drawn to it?
Well, I cannot say that from the four symphonies it's my favorite, but certainly the slow movement is unique. And the other three symphonies of Schumann don't have this kind of profound slow movement, although they are profound pieces. But this is one of the most beautiful, most deep, most elaborate, and also best formed adagio in the Romantic literature, actually, including the Brahms symphonies.
Well, it's interesting because I understand that the composer himself talked about this as a new manner of composing.
Well, I find it more interesting and actually revealing that it was composed in a very, very bad time of Schumann. He was suffering from depressions and very, very heavily suffering. And then he wrote this C major symphony, which is amazing. And I think it is something written about coming over the illness and forgetting the illness and writing something bright and wonderful, positive, at least in the first and second and the fourth movement. But the adagio naturally reflects his inner sadness.
The composer said that this reflected a dark period in his life. It's that movement where he lets you into that period.
Yes, and in the same time, it finishes with a C major chord and finishes so that he could go on into the fourth movement in C major in a bright and incredible attitude. Although there is a very mysterious point in this last movement where it comes down again to C minor and almost the piece ends there. And there's a total silence after four C minor chords. And we keep this silence for a moment. And after this, the oboe begins with like a flower blossoming on top of an abyss, and which I find actually the most wonderful moment in the whole piece.
That's beautiful. We'll have to listen for that. Do you find that your approach to something like this symphony changes over the years? Because you recorded all the symphonies of Schumann a while ago. And I suppose that with the passage of time, your approach might change. And also, depending on which orchestra is playing it, what does the Philadelphia Orchestra bring to this symphony today?
Well, first of all, to the first part of your question, this is a piece which did not change so much in my during the time I performed it, and I performed it since quite some years, including this orchestra. I've performed with them, and I've also my own musical material which I carry with me, and changed some things in it. But basically, it has not changed so much as, for example, the Beethoven symphonies in my interpretation have changed a lot. But this kept rather constant, like an island on which I go and have my own piece. So that is my symphony. It became my symphony.
It's interesting because I was thinking about the power of music. When you're listening to the orchestra, for example, music can sometimes sweep us up into a different realm so that we're not merely listening, but we're a part of the music. And I suppose as a musician and a conductor, it's that much more intense.
Yes, it's actually a condition, I think, that you as a conductor and as a musician has to make the doors open to get into this other realm, which is helping us all, you know, and I hope it helps also us being there, helps also in the projection to the audience and helps them getting into another world.
You know, it's funny because you have always impressed me not only with your seriousness and intensity about the music, but your good humor and your joyfulness about the music.
Exactly. It's not only, as you said, it's not only serious and full of problems which have to be solved through practicing or rehearsing or whatever. No, it's also full of humor, like this program, like what we just heard, the Till Eulenspiegel. It's such a humorous piece. I mean, it's so full of jokes, actually, and we have to bring them out, and the orchestra does it wonderfully.
Now, one thing we're talking about is the future of classical music and what people think about how to preserve the future of classical music. When you were in Philadelphia, you were a strong advocate for raising the invisible curtain and having the musicians face forward and things they still do today. Are there other steps that we should be taking in the world of classical music to keep things fresh, to keep attracting new audiences?
Well, I think one thing is very astonishing in our time now, that the amount of talent which is around. You know, you see it a few yards further here in Curtis. What incredible talent place it is, you know. And now with the new buildings, they have more possibilities. But worldwide, I see so many more young artists, you know, not only students, but just people who begin careers, that this is the encouragement for the future, I think. And the more an institution can care about them and for them, also to bring them as soloists or letting the seasoned musicians of the Philadelphia Orchestra make chamber music with them or include them to their circles, and that publicly, that can open a new view on the future of music. The young people make it.
Could we talk a little bit about you and your relationship to music? Could you talk about the huge impact that music made on you as a young child, and how has that changed as you've grown older?
Well, music had the incredible impact on me as a child, having had suffered through the end of the war and having been almost speechless. And so music gave me the immediate and direct way to express myself. And I had to express myself because I was full and closed of terrible impressions. So expression was for me the very, very important thing. And music did it, and I will never forget it. I will be always grateful to music that I came to life again and began a new life. And this has not changed. This has not changed through my whole life. And when I prepare for a concert, whatever orchestra it is, I prepare like really a matter of life. It is not a matter of paper. It's not a matter of reading a score. It's a matter of life. And I look behind every note for its own expression and its own context, but it has always to do with expression. So that hasn't changed and will not change. And of course, doing this program here with this orchestra, which I love, is very, very important for me. And to come back to this orchestra year for year, it's really of utter importance, I must say. And I say it not for giving a compliment, I say it as a total truth.
What's it been like these last couple of days?
Well, you know, it's like coming back to old friends. You know, when you come to a place where you meet old friends, then it makes you happy. Everybody here is extremely kind to me and extremely wonderful. And that makes me light and happy and easygoing.
Do you find, as you've grown older, do you find yourself drawn to particular repertoire?
No, not really. On the other hand, turn it around, I feel in my age, old age, I feel very young. And I feel that I have to explore much what I haven't done. For example, I haven't done many of the Shostakovich symphonies. I've done only four. There are 15. And because the door to Shostakovich opened rather late in my life, kind of 20 years ago. And same thing with Sibelius. Same thing with some opera literature. So many, many things are waiting for me, or I wait for many things to be which I can identify with. So I'm always looking forward. I'm always full of curiosity, and that gives me the drive.
Could we talk a little bit about your mentors, George Sell and Herbert von Karajan? You said that Sell was like a sculptor and von Karajan was like a painter. So I was going to ask you what you are aiming for.
For both, actually, because I learned a lot from both, and without copying them a minute, but just learning from them. Sculptor, well, Sell was very, very concerned about form and about phrasing, about the form of a phrase, for example, addiction, that not addiction, about diction of phrases. So what can a phrase tell? So that belongs also to form. Whereas Karajan was very much concerned about the colors in the orchestra and where the color changes happen and make them subtle or make them abrupt or make them... He always talked about color also to the orchestra when he rehearsed. So I had a very broad base from these two great, great conductors to learn and to make it influence my own way of reading music and making music.
Thank you so much, Christoph Eschenbach.
Thank you.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.